Welcome to MP Access, the official podcast of Mortgage Point and the Five Star Institute. My name is Gina Galusha. I am the Executive Director of Memberships at Five Star. And today we're at the Legal League Spring Servicer Summit to meet with lenders, servicers, GSEs, and attorneys to talk through the most common issues of the day. However, today we took a little side quest. We're going to go with side quest. And Joe and I had a fireside chat. This is Joe Lara of Find the X. And today we're going to talk with you about what we unpacked on the stage during the fireside chat and go a little deeper as well. So lucky you. Thank you, Joe. Tell us about yourself.
Thank you, Gina, for the opportunity. So born and raised in El Paso, Texas, but didn't want to live there for the rest of my life. So I joined the military.
So you could live everywhere.
I wanted to see the world. And I had to join the Navy because if I joined the Army, I might end up right back in El Paso at Fort Bliss.
Oh, yes.
Right? So joined the Navy, and I didn't know I was going to turn into the career it did, but it was 24 years as a cryptologist, so a code breaker, working for the NSA and Department of Defense. Did that pretty well, but then it got to that age where my sons were now entering teenage years, and I felt like I needed to be home more. So I made the pivot and transitioned to civilian life where I served inside a nonprofit for quite a few years, and then the boys at that time were now needing to go to college, and nonprofit and college salaries don't quite connect. So went to the private sector and did that for about 4.5 years or so. And then recently just started my own company, Find the X, which is coaching and consulting and leadership development.
Nice. Yeah. Tell us about what is X.
So this ties back to my military career and a bit of a nerd. So as a cryptologist, lots of ones and zeros, but then also mathematics, X is the unknown, right? And so that's a little tie. And so today, that's what I do. I help people uncover the thing that they're looking for. And it's different for everybody. Some people feel like maybe they're stuck in their career, or some want to make a career transition and a pivot. So I help them navigate that, so they're not alone in doing so. And I have a method that's been proven to go really well. But the title Find the X goes back to my military career, where the last 10 years I was working alongside Navy SEAL teams. And so what is a cryptologist doing inside a SEAL team? Well, before putting someone like myself in with the SEAL team, they were doing their missions, conducting what they had to do downrange, but not with lots of success. And luckily I was in the right timing, right equipment, right technology, and right training by them, so I could embed with what they did and lead them to the X. So I physically would lead them to the target, and then saw the correlation. If I was leading Navy SEALs to the X, can I do that as a civilian? And the answer is yes, absolutely. Just obviously different context, mm-hmm. but you get the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Less urgent, but same.
I still feel the sense of urgency, but yes, the fear factor is definitely different.
Right.
But I still have a sense of urgency and purpose,
mm-hmm.
very much so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I haven't mentioned this to you yet, but when I was a kid, I grew up on a lot of Steven Seagal movies.
Oh, man.
And so what I wanted to be when I grew up was a SEAL. And the day my dad told me they don't take women, I was devastated. Like, I needed you in that moment to help me coach through what am I going to do with my life, you know?
Yeah.
But we talked earlier about, like, that is intense. Being a SEAL is so intense. Like, my dad tried to dissuade me by telling me what their training was.
Yeah.
And then what their testing was. I was like, yes, let's do this.
Yeah.
But you know, when you were there as the nerd,
mm-hmm.
How did you create that culture of collaboration when there's such different parties involved and such different thinking?
Two different cultures.
Mm-hmm.
The culture that I came from as a cryptologist, a lot of the environments were buildings with no windows, right? Seriously, if you think about it, sometimes we would call it a sensitive compartmented information facility, a SCIF. So we're talking top secret type stuff. And now I have to work with these individuals that are well known, well documented to be some of the coolest, also hardest people on the planet. And I have to somehow convince them to take a little nerd along with them. But the data showed that they did their job well, but the intelligence picture was weak at the time. And they're limited on their ability to capture intelligence that was necessary to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had to make a sacrifice and potentially bring somebody along from the outside in And I was in the right position to kind of know my job really well, but also had to raise my level of ability and lots of humility, let's just say, on both sides. It wasn't where one side necessarily dominated. We were both sacrificing. But ultimately, it was to do the goal that was necessary. And so what I learned in that environment was, and we didn't talk about this earlier, but the definition of a high-performing team. Mm. One of my favorite books coming out of my master's degree was written by John Katzenbach, The Wisdom of Teams, and he describes it. So a lot of us are in teams, and we talk about, oh, my team did this. We accomplished X, Y, Z, whatever that may be. And I understand why that term is used. But John would argue that that's really the definition a lot of us are using. It is really a working group, meaning we all come together really good at our jobs to do our job, and that's it. I did my part. I'm out of here because you're paying me to do my part. That's what I'm motivated to do. That's my drive. I went to school for this. This is what I do. It's my title. I do my job, and then I leave. I might pick up a little bit of slack here and there, but I'm here to do my job. That's really a highly functioning working group, not really the definition of a team. And so John goes on to further describe what a true, highly functioning team is. And it is, you have a hierarchical, you know who's in charge, you have the mission, but at any given point, anybody can step in and lead, and egos are not hurt. That's an important piece, right? So anybody can step in and lead, but also egos are not hurt. That means that collectively, there's probably crush a lot of amazing work together, as opposed to those that strictly stay within their lane, only do what they're told to do, or only do what they want to do. So there's this huge trust factor that's required to be in a high-performing team.
Right.
And I learned that from being on the X. Yeah.
Right. So to unpack that a little bit further, there's something you said, trust is required, but expertise is also required, right?
Absolutely.
On that team, because if anyone needs to step in and lead at any time, you've got to know how to lead.
Yes.
Right. And you've got to be empowered to lead, but you also have to have the expertise to lead in that moment when you're needed.
Right.
So when you are thinking through putting together a team like that, is there anything else you look for in building a team like that?
Well, a lot of us, when we build our teams, we're looking at skill sets, right? So we're looking at vocation. We're looking at what do people possess that they've learned and experienced with. But there's this other piece too, which is the talents and the strengths of people. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of individuals, in fact, Gallup collects the data, and I showed a slide earlier describing of people that are either engaged or disengaged in work. That's tied to talent, not necessarily the job that they do, the day-to-day job. It's really their hidden talents that are maybe not being executed. So if I find out with Eugenia that, maybe you're a strategic thinker, big thinker, foresight, also a developer, and all these really great skill sets, but you're in a role that doesn't allow you to exercise those. Maybe it's more analytical, and you do it well, but it's not your wheelhouse, right? You're this other thing, and it never gets tapped into. Imagine if you did your job, but you also expressed and learned how to leverage those other talents. That is invaluable, and you're going to be more excited and show up to work. And so us as leaders, we're responsible. And I say leaders not as the one in charge, because I think we talked about this. You don't have to have people underneath you to be a leader. Anybody can be a leader. In fact, right. I think we're all leaders. Leader means influence. You said it well out there. I'm glad you nailed it too.
Thanks.
That is an important piece, but I don't have to be the one in charge to still know what your talents are. I could be working for you and know something about you that you may even be blinded by.
Right.
And you're really good at knowing what's next, and we haven't even talked about it, but you're voodoo wizard. You just know where we're going. And you're I never thought about that. Having those honest conversations about our talents, that's priceless gold. I love that.
So one of the things you and I have talked about that you focus on at Find the X, and I think it's really important to that component of leadership, is what is your identity, right? How can you understand how you lead, or if you lead well, if you don't know who you are? And something that I've noticed in America specifically is our identity is tied up in our career, right? When you meet someone, you say, what do you do? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Europe, et cetera, it's where do you travel? right?
Okay.
You know, what do you do in your leisure? That's who you are as a human being, not your occupation. So what does that look like as you're finding the X for someone, that unknown for them and what they want and where they need to go next, that you help them unpack their personhood and separate it from work so that then they can be better at work?
Yeah, Simon Sinek writes about that. He did a famous TED Talk. It's like the second most watched TED Talk. Start with why. For a company, it's usually tied to the founder of the company, the vision of the company, the reason why the company even exists. And that was mostly what his talk was about. But he also did some further work with individuals and helping them realize, hey, look, to your point, we're more than our titles. We learn that that's important at a young age because the expectations from maybe parents or guardians and teachers and societal expectations of, hey, what you produce and is your value.
Right.
Right.
Like in kindergarten, you don't hear who do you want to be when you grow up. You hear what.
Yeah, very much so. And you might get, oh, I want to be an astronaut, or I want to be whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's great. But it goes back to the job.
Right.
It goes back to a thing. Right. And so what I love about Simon Sinek's framework is called the Golden Circle. And so a lot of us live – the Golden Circle is basically it's three rings, and they kind of start from the center with the why in the middle. Then it goes to the second ring, which is how. Hmm. And the outer ring is what.
Right.
So we live in this what world.
Mm-hmm.
We know what we do, and we live by it. And we introduce, to your point, at picnics. Hey, what do you do for a living? Oh, I'm in sales or whatever, right? And but here's a great analogy or just example of how unfair it can be, right? So 2000s, I'm in the military. 2010, 2020, 2016 is when I got out. For a large amount of my career, when I would walk amongst my civilian counterparts, I would hear "Thank you for your service" when they heard I was in the military. Now inside, as a military member, that feels weird to hear that.
I've always wondered.
It feels weird. It's like, I'm just doing my job, right? But thank you. So we just learned to say thank you back, right? But anyway, so it's like, thank you for your service. And I think a lot of people would say it. Very common thing to say. Now imagine it's late 1960s.
Hmm.
And I say, I was in the military. What would be the response? Not as welcoming.
You should have gone to Canada.
Right? Not as welcoming.
Yeah.
Probably ridiculed. What changed? Was it the job?
Mm.
Or was it society's expectations of who you are and your identity?
Mm-hmm.
You are identified by what you do, mm-hmm. unfairly. It's very unfair. And so,
Same with police, right?
Absolutely.
Police 10 years ago versus today.
If you were a firefighter or a police person in New York 2001, you're a hero.
Absolutely.
And into this day and age, like today, I should say, it's tough. It's not fair. And or if I said, hey, I work in corporate or I work in Wall Street, you know, you're like, oh, wow. You know, you start laughing, right? Because
yes.
We have these expectations.
We do. But also I think there's that double-edged sword with that one. It's prestigious, but it's also like, oh, you're heartless, money-grubbing, et cetera.
Yeah. So to kind of go back to the identity piece, there's a lot – that's the what layer of the Golden Circle. When I talked about strengths earlier, the strength, the innate talents, what makes you uniquely you, now we're getting to the good stuff. This is the how layer of the Golden Circle. That's what separates Gina, who does this for this organization, versus somebody who does a similar thing for another organization, and their name's Fred. You approach work differently. The result is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as good as you, right? But let's just say it's pretty good. It's pretty even. How you approach it is very different. And that is what the fascinating stuff. Now we're getting a little bit closer to who you are. We're more than just what we do. How we approach work is just as important. The why part is the neat stuff. But here's the difficulty, and this is what Simon kind of figured out as well, is that a lot of times we don't have the language to describe the best version of ourselves. It kind of lives within our story. And so if we were to listen to your full story, Gina, you told me a little bit about your career path. We talked about career, the what side, but there was some teaching in your background and some writing and reporting. But there's also a story what led you in that path in the first place. And it might have been a conversation you had with a mentor or who knows what. Again, what you do is not really as important as how you do it and why you do it. And so what we've learned through the work of a why discovery, which is a process of people telling their stories. Man, that's the essence of your why. It's hidden within there. There's these golden threads that connect all the dots. And it starts from your earliest memories and has shaped you into who you are today. So a lot of the work I do with clients is we have a lot of identity conversations. Mm-hmm. And it always goes back to your earliest memories. And we kind of walk through it. And we do some strengths work. And then at the end of the day, you start realizing, okay, what I do is important, but it's not all of who I am. Mm-hmm. And so I can no longer really start from what. I have to start from why from now on. It's like the Matrix, red pill, blue pill.
Yes.
I now know too much mm-hmm. about me, and it's going to now help me make better decisions as I move forward in life. I'm not going to choose to do that because that is not aligned with who I am. That is a what opportunity, and it might pay, but what am I sacrificing? Am I not going to live out my talents and mm-hmm. suppress them maybe? Mm-hmm. Suppress my values, suppress my morals just to get paid? How long am I going to be able to keep that up? Sleep well, all of those things. But if you can get it aligned with all three of those, man, that is the goal.
It's magic.
Magic, pure.
Yeah. It reminds me of, you know, we talked about after I was done teaching, I went and did teacher coaching mm-hmm. and helped start schools. And then, you know, I'd observe teachers and work with them on things. And one of the things we found regularly was that teachers would assign a lot because it was supposed to be a hard school, which means things, right? Ah. The what. And yeah. really great education comes down to understanding the why of the topic
yeah.
and the theme of the topic and being able to think about it and apply it, right? But that's harder to grade. That's harder to put in a box. That's harder to, you know, just kind of process. Mm-hmm. And I think the same is true for what you're talking about, right? It's easy to grade a multiple choice quiz.
Yeah.
And it's easy to tell you, I'm the executive director of membership, although then it usually takes 5 minutes to explain what the Hades that means. But, you know, that's so much simpler.
Yeah.
And it feels easier.
It is easier. It's also what a lot of measure, you know, stats and metrics are based mm-hmm. off of is the external stuff.
Right.
The how and the why is very mushy. And it's hard to nail down what that is.
And it's not the same every time.
No, it's right? not the same. But the neat thing is, though, it's like visible in culture. Mm. It's visible in output, long-term output, and impact. I think that's the other thing, too. And here's the neat thing with this why work is it's not that what's are bad. What is good? It's just, is it aligned with the best version of you? And so that is really the value of doing the identity work. And people just live differently. I've worked with literally hundreds of veterans in that nonprofit mm-hmm. with their transition and was working primarily with special operations, right. Navy SEALs. And we would have a lot of why conversations, but we first started with what conversations, then turned it into how, and then right. eventually got to the...
What is comfortable to what is uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly. And we use their own terminology. Hey, you remember getting wet in sandy and being uncomfortable and learning how to be comfortable in that? We're going to have some mushy conversations and we're going to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And their eyes get really big. Wait, what do you mean vulnerable? We don't do that.
I didn't sign up for that.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do that.
Right.
Yeah. And they thrive.
Yeah. What a nerd moment.
Yes.
At the door of the Oracle of Delphi in ancient Greece, do you know what was above the door?
Mm-mm.
It said, know thyself.
Mm.
And it was because no matter what prophecy you got, if you didn't have a sense of self and understand who you were as mm-hmm. a person, it wasn't going to work for you.
Yeah.
Right? Not the way you wanted to. Yeah. So you really do have to understand who you are the core
mm-hmm.
before you can be successful in those really impactful and meaningful ways.
Yeah. And I guess it's funny when you ask people, when do you discover that? When do you discover know thyself, that process? When does that happen? And I don't know about your, you know, I would love to hear your story too, like in detail, if you're willing to share it one day, maybe not on the podcast, but, but like people's pathways to get to where they are. At some point, at least in the Western side of the world, we kind of have to figure it out and start adulting.
Yes.
and I need to contribute to society and get a job like everybody else and pay my taxes and be independent, right? Mm-hmm. To show a status of independence and contribution. Wow. And so a lot of people kind of just stumble their way through, maybe making some serious choices, second guessing their career path, their degree path, all of those things, and stumble into what they got, which is very normal. It'd be amazing if we could maybe be more intentional with that. So mm-hmm. I'd love to see these conversations happening in education.
Right. Because they're so focused on the what, right?
So focused on the what.
They take an aptitude test to tell you what job you'd be good at, not what kind of human being you are and how to, like, grow in that.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
So, because again, it's easier to categorize a human being than to understand one.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Wild. When you discover yourself, know thyself, right? Mm. It's really key for leadership as well. Because mm-hmm. if you don't understand your motivations and why you respond the way you do and those kinds of things, it's going to be messy, right? Mm-hmm. So when you are teaching about leadership, you start with the why, I'm mm-hmm. assuming. Mm-hmm. And then where do you go from there to help them understand who they are as a leader, what types of leadership there are, and what they shouldn't be employing?
No, that's a great question. I think this is where it goes into the individual themselves. And so some people, you'll hear the term natural born leader. And I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think some people have traits that lend themselves to be really great leaders. But I think people can actually work on it and become good leaders. And this is where the individual self, the whole, so let's just say the whole golden circle comes into play. And we were talking about this earlier. There's not necessarily one style of leadership that fits every person. But there are the tenets to leadership. And what I found is what to be successful is this idea of the growth mindset. And so if the leader has a growth mindset, then they're going to be willing to sort of do the, again, three things that I talked about in the room is demonstrate humility that I don't know what I don't know. I'm a leader and I can lead this team, but now we have a new member that just came in and I'm lost.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have a sense of humility. I'm going to admit internally I'm lost. I need help. The second thing is courage. Maybe do some active listening, try some different things, read, seek counsel from other leaders. Maybe ask for the group to, hey, what's your input on, maybe not blasting that individual, but saying, hey, in this environment, what do you think would work really well? So just seeking outside perspectives. Yeah. Courageous behavior. So humility, courageous. And then when you find that thing that's working, be disciplined with it.
Mm-hmm.
And because at the end of the day, it's our job to help individuals succeed. And so there's individuals that are working here. It's not just you helping that person shape and become better version of themselves, but also you yourself are adjusting and adapting and learning new things. I've experienced a lot of various different environments, therefore different types of people, therefore different types of leadership styles. I know what works for me, but that doesn't mean what I do is perfectly successful for everybody else. So I never want to assume or even project that my method is the method, because I don't think that's true. I think we have to be very adaptable, very active listening, and lead with a sense of humility and growth mindset. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was thinking today, apparently my dad is on my brain a lot lately. My dad taught me, he has his doctorate in business management and he taught MBA programs. And he always said, Gina, don't come with a problem, come with a solution.
Mm.
Right. But on our team, we use traction model,
okay,
which you bring the problem to the team.
Yes.
You should have a solution,
right?
But your solution might not be as good as the team's, right? And that requires, again, the humility mm-hmm. and the courage. And then the whole team has to be disciplined about how we're going to implement this. And
yeah.
all of us have ownership in that, right?
Yeah. Love
so,
it.
It really works for problem solving mm-hmm. as a group too.
And as the leader, though, you have to have the humility, even though you might have the answer, zip it.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't tell you how many times, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, where, hey, we're going to have a team meeting. And the person who's running the meeting talks for 90% of the time. Oof. Oof. That's usually not a good sign,
mm-mm.
right? But if you can flip that and maybe as the leader set the trajectory, this is the goal.
Right.
And then get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
You're still there. Your brain is right. still there. But just let them breathe. Let them think and ideate.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be surprised how many amazing ideas that you were not even thinking, potentially saving time, money, introducing new technology, all the things that we need to do well and succeed.
Right.
Yeah. Vicki Halsey was another great professor I had in my master's, and she wrote a book where the premise is the brilliance is in the room.
Yes.
The brilliance is in the room.
Yes.
You're in charge. Humble yourself. Check that ego. There's brilliance in the room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so true. And the thing is that, like, it doesn't mean that you don't contribute. It doesn't mean that you don't guide.
Right.
I was thinking about what you said earlier in our fireside about how you're not a leader, you're a coach.
Mm.
Right. And the same is true for teaching. Mm. You introduce the subject, but you also teach them how to think through it and give them that framework. And then really, if you're leading a good class, like we do literature discussions, I wouldn't be the one talking the majority of the time, right?
Mm, yeah.
Because I'd given them the framework about how to problem solve, and then they just went through it.
Yeah.
With each other. And there were so many times we'd be walking through a passage, and I'd taught this book so many years to so many classes, and a kid would be like, what about this? And I'm like, whoa, you know? So
feels good, right?
It does feel good.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. It doesn't have to be you.
Yeah.
Right? You all learn from each other.
And isn't your job as a teacher and as a coach to eventually, like, they need to have their own legacy, right? They're going to go off and do great things.
Yes.
Are you going to be there talking 90% of the time in front of them for the rest of their life? No.
Mm-mm.
Right. And so the true sign of good leaders is you look at the legacy of those leaders.
Right.
Are they themselves becoming servant leaders? Are they themselves creating opportunities to coach others? Mm-hmm. Man, that is a telltale sign that you've led well.
Yes. And I think too, there's something I've heard a couple of times on LinkedIn where they're like, if you can recreate yourself, and I'm like, no.
No.
Oh my gosh, cloning Gina.
Yeah. There's only one Gina.
Right.
Yeah.
But what I am doing is teaching someone else and giving them the tools to reach their potential.
Yeah,
100%. Not mine.
I love that. I'm glad you mentioned that. You're right. We're not making clones. It's not what we're trying to do. But it's the characteristics or the traits or the essence of the bigger goal is that, hey, we're one, I need to honor that there is a Gina, and there's only one Gina in the world. We'll only ever see one Gina. Mm-hmm. And I don't expect anybody to ever follow your shoes, but you have your own shoes. Fill them, right?
Yes.
You know, I remember trying to succeed somebody else who had left the organization, and everybody kept saying, good luck filling their shoes. I'm like, man, I got my own shoes.
Right.
You know, let me do my thing.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, man, that's so true.
Yeah.
That's so true. Talk us through kind of your, I'm going to say, matrix of what is the foundation of leadership, and then where do the others apply?
Yeah, I appreciate that. So I'm a huge proponent of servant leadership, which gets a lot of negative connotation, which we talked about, because the word servant just throws people off. And Ken Blanchard would make the joke that, hey, it's not the prisoners running the prison. That's not what this is about. Servant leadership still has the word leadership pinned within it. And so if we start from there, and the idea is the leader is in charge. They're responsible for the group, the team, the objectives, setting the goals, and the direction for that team. That's what a leader does.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to implementation, the servant leader will basically flip the pyramid upside down, where now the people that are doing the work show up with their brains and their brilliance and do the work and are able to make decisions. And it's the boss's responsibility, though that person in charge's responsibility, to now coach and step in and say, okay, what do you need to succeed? Mm-hmm. How do I help you crush it? And so that's the underpinning. Servant leadership is the underpinning. So if we, you know, there's like 10 traits, and I can't remember them off the top of my head, but some of them are easy to anybody would agree that a good leader will listen, right? A good leader will have, be a good steward of resources. Those are kind of the well-known leadership traits. But then servant leadership also has this other one called empathy. Ugh, weird. Empathy. Imagine if we're human in our jobs, right? Empathy, listener, right? There's even one called healing, which kind of threw me back a little bit.
Ooh.
Healing. I didn't understand that one at first. When I first heard healing, what does healing mean? And ultimately, when you dig into the essence of what that means, it's just creating a place where people feel like they can actually show up as a true version of themselves.
Mm.
Not necessarily have to feel like they have to project that they have it all together, but they can really show up in their honest selves, have open communication, open dialogue, and not have the fear of being tranced upon and being given an opportunity to have honest conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the underpinning, then the type of leadership, whether it's transformational leadership, because we have a team that maybe is has the ability, but they don't have the training. And so we're going to go through some rigorous 2 weeks of training, mm-hmm. and it's going to be long nights, but we're going to come out on the other end better for it. Mm-hmm. And so it's getting buy-in and getting them to push themselves out of their comfort zone so that they succeed. They're now transformed, transformational leadership. It's pushing them out of their comfort zone. And then maybe switching to authentic leadership where, man, I feel like we're just kind of passing by each other. Just we're doing okay with work, but our culture is kind of missing something. And I don't know if we're able to really have honest conversations. So let's shift the focus of have more trusting conversations. So I'm going to lead as the leader and be honest and be open, vulnerable conversations here to create that environment, right? So it's being able to, as the leader, because you're serving the team, you're trying to adapt and figure out what does this team need? Mm-hmm. What does these individuals need? There's a lot of moving parts, right, with all of this. But it's a leader who's adaptive and ultimately realizes that I'm here to serve you. We're going to get the job done, and I'm in charge, and I'm ultimately responsible. But if you don't succeed, then we don't succeed. So what do I need to do? If you go in with that attitude, everything else will kind of fall into place. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So one thing I was thinking while you were talking was, you know, it's the foundation. Doesn't mean that transformational leadership without servant leadership doesn't work.
Correct.
Right? But it just doesn't work as well.
Correct.
It's not fully optimized and maximized.
Part of my my research for my degree, I had to, in servant leadership, and go back and visit a time where I failed as a leader. Mm-hmm. So I had to go back to a time when I'm in the military. And these are other cryptologists that are working with the Navy SEALs. So these are the group of people that report to me. And the culture wasn't quite right. In fact, it was making me concerned. It was making me very concerned because the new people that were coming into the fold were not being treated well. The senior guys in that group, instead of taking care of them, they were saying, well, I didn't have somebody tell me what to do. You go figure it out. So it was this new guy. The new guy became the term that I didn't like. Mm-hmm. And I'm in charge. And I'm like, hey, senior guys, knock that off. And then I started, you know, again, witnessing and observing that the behavior wasn't changing. And I'm like, hey, I already told you this needs to stop. We're going to lose these guys. They're going to want to quit, or they're going to want to go somewhere else. It's our job to take care of them. And I still didn't feel that the lesson was being understood. At the time, we had three fellow cryptologists that had died in combat on the X. The most recent one was, his name was Blink. And I knew this truth, but the guys didn't. We would celebrate honor them, have a toast on their death, on the day of their death. But they didn't know the true story of Blink, and I did. And so I pulled everybody in. I said, hey guys, get in the room right now. And I said, we honor the guys. How many operations did Blink do? I went around the room and everybody assumed, oh, you did probably, I don't know, 30, 40 ops, missions in Afghanistan or Iraq. They're just guessing. They all got it wrong. I was like, hey, look, here's the story of Blake. Blake's helicopter that we all know crashed. It was his first operation. You're honoring the guy that I knew Blake. You didn't know him. You honor him, but you didn't know him. Unfortunately, he lost his life on his very first operation. When you guys say the term new guy, you're talking to Blake. Knock it off. I didn't know what servant leadership was, but I was so upset. And I had to go back and revisit that story and actually call the guys that I once led that were in that room and tell them, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for maybe behaving a little harsh, but I think it's necessary. Or I thought it was necessary. But forgive me. So there's that forgiveness piece, right?
Yes.
It kind of comes in with...
You have to admit fault.
Yeah, yeah. That was recent. That was this last summer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah. So
guilt is a good motivator, but
yeah,
not always the best.
But the behavior changed.
Right.
I got what I needed
done. So it was transformational.
It was transformational.
It was.
But it came from a place of, man, I of course I love the guys, but knowing what I know now, I would have approached it differently, right? So servant leadership, to your point, transformational leadership can take place without this.
Right.
Looking back at it now, man, it would have been so much better if I had that servant leadership mindset.
Yeah.
Beginning. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
This has been wonderful.
Cool.
So much fun. We appreciate you. You're a little bit like, you know, we're not here talking about mortgage rates and defaults.
I live in a house.
Perfect. Me too. Me too. I also live. That was my what I knew when I got this job too. So no worries there. But like we were talking about in the room, everyone here is a leader, right? Everyone
yes.
listening is a leader. And so all of this is applicable to everyone. Mm-hmm. And so we really appreciate you sharing your wisdom and your insights and
you.
For joining us today. And thank you for joining us today. We're glad you're here. Hope you learned lots and
thank
we'll
you.
See you next time.
Thanks for listening to MP Access. Stay up to date with daily mortgage news, featured stories, and our latest episodes of the podcast at themortgagepoint.com. Don't miss out. We'll see you next week.